When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering updates on the status of the Wolf Islander 3.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
The Wolf Islander 3 is back in service after weeks of disruption, but uncertainty around the future of ferry service remains. The disruption began December 22nd. When the Ministry of Transportation halted service on the Wolf Islander 4 due to what it described as a mechanical issue. In a statement at the time, the ministry said the ferry would be out of service while staff worked to resolve the problem. To keep the route running, the Quinte Loyalist and the Amherst Islander 2 were brought in to cover trips between the island and Kingston. The Amherst Islander 2 carried vehicles and passengers during the day, while the Quinte Loyalist handled walk-on passengers overnight. On Tuesday, January 6th, the ministry announced the Wolf Islander 3 had completed a dry dock inspection in Hamilton and had begun its return to Kingston. The following night, Wednesday, January 7th, the vessel officially returned to service, relieving both replacement ferries and restoring a 60-minute round-trip schedule between the Kingston and Marysville docks. For many island residents, the return of the Wolf Islander 3 was met with relief. On the Wolf Island Ferry Updates and Issues Facebook page, users welcomed back Old Faithful and expressed frustration with the reliability of the newer Wolf Islander 4. While service has stabilized for now, questions remain unanswered. The Ministry of Transportation has not provided a timeline for when the Wolf Islander 4 will return to service, or whether the two ferries will operate together once repairs are complete. In its most recent update, the ministry repeated only that staff will continue to work diligently to bring the Wolf Islander 4 back into service as soon as possible. The boats may be moving again, but the long-term plan still seems unclear. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the 2026 Napanee Municipal Budget.
Thank you, Jesse. Town staff say the 2026 budget for Greater Napanee aims to strike a careful balance between holding the line on spending and addressing rising costs, largely under their control. Taking place at the historic town hall on John Street, an overview of the proposed $25.9 million operating and capital budget was introduced on January 7th. The proposed budget would raise $17.33 million in taxes this year, a 6.93% increase over 2025. Staff emphasized that about half of that comes from external bills, including the Ontario Provincial Police and local conservation authorities. Mayor Terry Richardson's directive for the 2026 budget asked staff to focus on core services like transportation and public safety, avoid adding new full-time positions, and find non-tax revenue wherever possible. He also directed a cut to the waste collection levy, reflecting new provincial rules that removed recycling from municipal responsibilities. Treasurer Ellen Hamill said rising expenses are driven mostly by existing wage and contract obligations, not new spending. There are no additional FTEs or full-time equivalents in this budget, she said. The plan adds $402,558 in operating enhancements, with funding for fire service needs, bylaw enforcement around encampments, new software and communications gear, and overtime for parks and recreation programs. Capital spending will stay at the same funding level as last year at $1.22 million, but shift priorities toward fire service equipment and used heavy machinery for public works. Assessment growth will help soften the tax hit on homeowners. With the added growth, the average tax rate increase is expected to be 5.82%, meaning the typical urban homeowner whose property is assessed at $219,000 would see the municipal portion of their bill rise about $88 this year to roughly $1,611. The town also plans to trim the annual waste collection surcharge from $200 to $150 per household, reflecting the municipality's reduced obligations. Councillors generally backed the cautious approach, but asked questions about waste costs and police billing. Councillor Bill Martin noted the province's decision to absorb recycling expenses, saying everybody in the province is now going to get the benefit of that. Even with the increase, town staff said Napanee is expected to maintain one of the region's lower tax rates. In 2025, the town's municipal rate was roughly 28% below the average of comparable Ontario municipalities. Hamill noted that budget amendment motions are due by February 6th, 2026 under Ontario's new strong mayor process, with final budget adoption required by March 3rd, 2026. All figures are drawn from the Town of Greater Napanee's draft 2026 operating and capital budget presentation dated January 7th, 2026, and the accompanying staff briefing to council. Figures may be adjusted before final approval. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a report from the LJR Reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times' Keith Dempsey that covers Sealy's Bay's upcoming Frost Fest.
Thank you, Dinah. The Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands Council has recognized the Sealy's Bay Lions Frost Fest 2026 as a municipally significant event, a designation that will allow organizers to serve alcohol during the festival. The three-day event, scheduled for February 6th to 8th in the village of Sealy's Bay, is organized by the Sealy's Bay Lions and includes a variety of activities for the local community. Council consideration of the designation is required by the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario, AGCO, to approve a Special Occasion Permit, SOP, which governs the sale, service, and consumption of alcohol at public events. According to the event application, alcohol will be served at the Sealy's Bay Community Hall during the comedy show on February 7th, with a cash bar open from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. The designation of municipal significance signals council's support for the festival and facilitates the SOP approval process. The AGCO's SOP program is commonly used for weddings, private receptions, charity fundraisers, and other large-scale events open to the public. By deeming the Frostfest as municipally significant, the township ensures the festival can proceed in compliance with provincial regulations while providing a safe, community-focused environment.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJPE County FM, Brenda Little, with a story about a chilly trend taking hold in Wellington, Ontario.
It seems that cold water plunging is gaining in popularity, as some people claim health benefits such as improved immune system, increased metabolism, and decreased stress. There is a small group of people in Wellington in Prince Edward County who gather to plunge into the cold waters of Lake Ontario, but today there are only two braving the minus 6 air temperature and the 0 Celsius water. I met up with Jennifer Cobb and her swim buddy Karen to see firsthand how and why they do it. As we trudge through the snow to the open water of Lane Creek, Jennifer and Karen tell us more.
I'm out here with Jennifer Cobb. What temperature do you think it is today, Jen?
Oh, my car said it was minus 6.
Minus 6. What are you anticipating the water temperature to be?
Lake Ontario water's been minus 1, but this is moving, so it's going to be just below 0.
You and your friends must be really desperate to go in the water today because the lake is inaccessible and the channel is frozen. You have come out here, adventured out on this incredibly cold day to find some water to get into. What do you anticipate is going to happen down there?
I was out this morning and scouted a spot, and there's a nice spot to be able to get into easily. And the only thing I anticipate is that Karen might complain a bit and ask, what's the source of this water?
How long have you been doing this, Jennifer?
I've been doing this for, well, intermittently a couple of years, and then every day since March 2020.
And what inspired you to do this?
It's a pandemic pastime.
Right. Yeah. But it has some benefits. Some benefits. I've been doing a bit of research myself. Now, we usually associate this with people working out in their athletic endeavors and then jumping into cold water. But that's not what you guys are doing. And this is not a recreational swim, is it?
Well, consider us old age athletes.
Okay, and now this is even different because mm-hmm. you can't get in the regular water.
Yeah, and it's very different.
Yeah.
Jennifer's like a divining rod. She finds open water wherever she can. And so we just go, okay.
Now, for anybody that wanted to try this, is there training involved?
Not that I know of. There's one health contraindication, and that would be heart issues or cardiac issues. Other than that, there's a whole history of many continents, of Norway, Sweden, Finland, people using cold immersion and thermal regulation very regularly for health benefit.
For centuries, I've read.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it comes and goes in popularity, of course, and North America has kind of picked up on it in the last number of years. So.
I think there's a big increase through a lot of the biohackers and the sort of longevity people, and people are starting to be a little more aware of how things affect their body.
And what kind of equipment do you use here?
Neoprene booties and neoprene gloves.
The thing I can mention about the health, like the heart issue for sure, is definitely something you have to talk to your doctor about. And when you first go in, if you're not used to it, you tend to hyperventilate, so you do have to sort of breathe and make sure you breathe out as a or a or whatever feels good for you. You know, you have to make sure your breath gets out so you don't start to hyperventilate.
Exactly.
Because it's an automatic reaction, really, for your body.
And that takes a bit of practice, I would imagine.
Yeah. Well, it only took once for me, and I'm like, okay, I can't do this anymore because I want to go in there, and so I have to learn how to let it out.
Manage it.
Yeah.
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 Think about the long-term effects if each of us knew how to regulate our nervous system and what it would do for us, not just in a cold water immersion or an emergency, but throughout our lives.
And you've noticed changes yourself since you've been doing this. Can you talk about that a bit?
I've had definitely increased immunity, increased metabolism, increased sense that I can do way more than I thought I could do. And so, you know, self-confidence. But also, I've made a really nice cadre of friends who are as experimental or crazy or adventurous as I am.
How many are there of you?
We're the original OGs,
yeah.
and then people added on, so there's quite a few that are now semi-regular, for sure. I think Jennifer is the one that goes in most days, and I try to, and I think other people sort of step in when I can't, so sometimes we have 8, 10, and sometimes there's just 2 or 1.
Yeah, we have a regular text list of 10. Oh. And people who come to us sometimes and then have their own little spots. And one woman, Kat, has a stream in her parents' backyard that she's been in regularly, which inspired me here, right?
Yeah.
Wow. And then we've done full moon swims where there's 25 or 30 people in the summer when it's warm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that did start a couple of years ago, and the full moon swims in the summer are so fun. You just go in and you howl and you hug, and it's an amazing experience.
And of course,
experience.
The water is different, so
yes,
it's a whole different
experience. Yeah, that's different from the cold water, but it's still the water and, you know, embracing friendship and all that.
Well, this sounds really exciting. Are you guys ready?
Yeah, are you? You don't look like you have a bathing suit on, though.
No.
Good one.
And they're in. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about United Way Northumberland's fundraising goals.
Hi, I'm Dan Jones with CFWN in Cobourg, Ontario. The United Way Northumberland is nearing its 2026 fundraising goal. Approximately $700,000 of its $800,000 target has been achieved. With a successful Christmas campaign, the agency is looking to keep the momentum going in January. Executive Director Alicia Van Dyne says donations are steadily coming in this month.
It's going really well. We're just over the 700,000 mark, so we are closing in on our target. We have 3 months to go, so I'm pretty excited about the progress that we've been making so far.
How'd the Christmas drive go?
It was excellent. You know, we had lots of folks come and visit us, of course, during Radiothon time and our direct letter campaign. We had folks that were sending in checks and calling in donations, and it's not too late. People, I would encourage you to make a donation. Our campaign runs until the end of March this year, and we'd really appreciate getting to our goal. We're impacting 1 in 4 in Northumberland County, and so the work that we do is very important.
Now, heading post-Christmas, it's usually people are a little tight who are trying to pay down their Christmas bills and maybe save some money for the spring. How do you switch gears to getting that campaign going and trying to get people to donate in such a quiet time?
You know, some folks, they make donations all year long. It's really, people are not necessarily motivated by a tax receipt, you know, getting their donation in before the Christmas season. But, you know, in January, what we do see is an uptake in monthly givers. And so people who are able to do a small amount each month versus a large amount, that always has a bit of an uptake in January, and we would encourage people to be that are able to be able to do that. You can do that either by calling our office or going online. You can set up a small monthly donation because those small amounts, they certainly add up at the end of the year.
Now, last year you and I are kind of discussing some of the challenges facing Northumberland County, one being food insecurity and the other being housing. Are you still seeing that post-Christmas now?
You know, I think always after the holidays, we're always going to see the food insecurity continue. I think it just really shines a light on it at that particular time of year. Housing insecurity, I don't think, is going to be going away anytime soon. And so I think both of those issues are still going to be things that we'll be thinking about into 2026, 2027. You know, United Way is going into a strategic planning session in the middle of January, and we've been listening a lot, and we've got a researcher who is really taking a look at what Northumberland County looks like, and that way we can make sure that we're putting resources to make the biggest impact.
Now, I know we did talk about the four pillars that the United Way is focusing on. Is that still the same four pillars we're going to be heading into for 26?
Yeah, it's three pillars. It's poverty to possibility, kids can be all they can be, and building strong communities. And so within those pillars, of course, there's a few things that are listed. But yes, that will always be the focus of United Way. It's not only just a Northumberland United Way, it's also our national United Way three pillars.
So if I want to donate, how do I go about doing that?
You can, of course, call our office at 905-372-6955. You can go online at mynuw.org and make a donation online. And, of course, we love to have people come to the door right at our office. It's always lovely to meet people at the same time. They can visit us at 62 Swain Street in downtown Coburg.
Now, before I let you go, though, there was you guys have been hosting some pretty cool campaigns like the Ultimate Burger Challenge and your Christmas Drive. Do you have anything going on for the springtime?
We actually have something coming up for February for everybody who might have a sweet tooth. We have a dessert online auction that will be launching shortly. It will be, I believe the auction takes place about a week before Valentine's Day. And so it's a good way to just get your sweet tooth on for such a lovely time of the year.
Well, I might have to bid, and I might go bankrupt because I'm a big sweet tooth guy. So.
We will make sure to send you the link. Once the auction is live, you know I'll be sending you a link.
Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up on The Corridor, supported by local realtor Kim Purcell at kimpurcell.ca, is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, January 15th, Daytime high of minus 11, but with the wind chill, it's going to feel closer to minus 20. A sunny but very chilly day here in the city of Kingston. Friday, January 16th, daytime high of minus 10, overnight low of minus 12. Moving into the weekend, Saturday, January 17th, high of 0. And it'll actually feel a degree warmer than that, a real temperature feel of 1 degree, dropping down to minus 8 overnight. Sunday, January 18th, daytime high of minus 3, overnight low of minus 14. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, January 19th, daytime high of minus 4. But folks, it's going to be cold, wind chill making it feel closer to minus 15 with a 60% chance of light snow. This week's City of Kingston traffic report has very little to report, but I do want to remind our listeners that the full winter parking restrictions went into effect on January 1st. During January and February, overnight on-street parking is not permitted, no matter the weather conditions. That will change in March, where overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it, so think particularly snowy or icy evenings. When restrictions are in place, parking on city streets is prohibited from 1 a.m. to 7 a.m. On the streets surrounding Kingston General Hospital, the ban runs from 12 a.m. to 7 a.m. Vehicles left on the street during bans are subject to ticketing and towing. To learn more about parking restrictions, how they work, and to stay informed, you can visit the City of Kingston website.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.